I'll just remind you once again that you're listening to KUCI in Irvine, and hit a little theme music. Darkling Eclectica presents a collection of broadcast fiction brought to you by the Darkling Eclectica. Reputation by Michael H. Payne, Part 11. Scuttling and small, it's a beetle, that's all. That sound in your ear can't be something to fear, until Rat reaches out, stabs a claw through your snout, drags you kicking and screaming through some nightmare seeming to endlessly drop you and flop you and chop you, a vision forlorn in a landscape stillborn. The Curials chase him, but they can't erase him, can't take from your eyes his dank, poisonous lies, for they made him, it's true, and there's naught they can do, since he wields their power, a shaman gone sour. From The Nightmare Chorus, in Act 2 of Heart's Blood, by the ferret playwright Nazime Takshante, first performed at the Nine Nights Festival, Ngaishin, 1733. Rat yawned and stretched, his whiskers perking at the first stroke he gave them through the air. Crawling from his blanket, he pushed the shutters open and looked out over Blaze's flower box at the clearing. Sure enough, the patch of snow he'd been watching shrink all week was now completely gone, and only 3 days after the equinox, too. Earliest thaw he could remember. A couple big breaths, and he turned, scurried out into the hall, and slid down to the main chamber. First, some breakfast. Then he'd be off to look for Blaze. Not that he was worried. As he'd told Skink last night, it wasn't the first time she'd skipped a meeting.
True,
the lizard had replied from his usual spot in front of the fire.
She was, however, also absent from our last meeting, and she's never missed two in a row.
And when darkness had fallen with no sign of her, Skink had gotten positively antsy.
The solstice and the equinox are very subtle moments,
he had said, scuttling once more down the hall to peer out the front door.
Realms shift, time flexes, exchanges are made. That Blaze should not attend both our last meeting of winter and our first meeting of spring speaks to me of curial movement.
Rat had shrugged.
Blaze can take care of herself. You ought to know that by now.
Yes.
Skink had shivered, though the night was the warmest Rat had felt in 3 months.
Yet I would still feel better if we knew her present whereabouts.
So Rat had promised to look for her this morning, had given Skink a cup of tea, had even walked him home. And not once on the trip to Skink's rock and back had Rat's whiskers so much as twitched, no danger scent at all in the woods. And he'd slept last night better than he had in weeks. He shook his head, dumped a bit of warmed-over biscuit from the fire pit griddle onto his one acorn-shell plate, and poured maple syrup over it. Blaze had been her usual self the last time he'd seen her, and that had only been, what, 10 days ago? Probably her mom was after her again. Blaze had ended every meeting throughout the winter by reenacting the arguments she'd been having with her mother, her voice sounding exactly like Fisher's as she ranted about the folly of spending time with known criminals, consorting with reptiles, reading the wrong sorts of books about the Curials. Rat thought it was the funniest thing he'd ever seen. But Skink was appalled.
"Does the Shaman of Ottersgate,"
he had finally exclaimed a few weeks ago,
"truly hold such narrow views?"
Blaze had smiled, held up a claw, and said, "The current shaman of Otter's Gate. Once I take my spirit walk, there's gonna be some big changes around here." Whatever that meant, Blaze and Skink still wouldn't tell Rat what they were really after, something that had gotten more and more annoying as winter had worn on. Sure, he liked them coming over, but, well, they'd been meeting for a whole year, almost, with nothing happening, as far as Rat could tell. He licked the syrup from his plate, dropped it into the sink, and climbed out the kitchen door on the north side of the stump. A beautiful day, at least. The air just a little cool, just a little damp. He stretched and yawned some more, then started for the northeast edge of the clearing. Tracking this early in the spring was always a challenge. Any scent markers left during the winter would be washed away with the snow melting, and the soil was still frozen enough to make paw prints shallow and difficult to read. But then, it wouldn't be any fun if it was too easy. He wove between the trunks, his whiskers spread, but he wasn't expecting to find any traces here. He'd head up to her parents' sycamore, circle the trees just outside the clearing, see what trails he could pick up. She might even be home with a late winter head cold or something. The slight rustle of the breeze was coming from the south, so he circled wide to the north before starting toward the sycamore. Even a wind this light would carry traces of spore, if there were any to be. The first thing across his snout, Officer Hawk, hard-edged and unmistakable, made him pick up his pace till he reached the clearing. He stopped behind a box elder, peered around, and saw Hawk perched on one of the sycamore's bare branches, Fisher and her husband Reuben sitting beside him. The two males were facing away, so he just caught a few of their words, no sign of her yet, from Hawk and, "Been a week now," from Reuben. Then Fisher spoke up, and her voice carried across the clearing.
"I've tried to talk sense to her, officer, but she's always had her own ideas about everything, especially her spirit walk and that rat. I know he's involved in this somehow, but I couldn't... She wouldn't... I just..."
Her voice broke, and she covered her eyes with her paws, Reuben pressing his shoulder against hers. Officer Hawk nodded. "His last known residence now," Rat heard. Then Hawk touched Fisher's back and sprang into the air, his big brown and gray wings sweeping him up and over the trees to the southwest. Rat swallowed. Good thing he'd gotten up early this morning. He looked back at the Fishers, Reuben guiding his wife through a hole into the sycamore's trunk. Blaze wasn't the sort to go off without telling anyone. Even last year, during her week of fasting and mushroom popping, she'd told him that she'd kept in touch with her folks. Although, that had been right at the beginning of spring, too, hadn't it? And one of the few things he'd managed to glean from Blaze and Skink was that the Curials liked to do things in cycles. Day followed night, followed day followed night. The moon waxed and waned every month. The seasons repeated each year. Maybe Blaze had made fasting and mushrooms a regular part of her early spring. But wouldn't she have told her folks? Unless she'd decided she needed the isolation for her visions. Or she'd gotten whacked by some bad mushrooms. Neck fur prickling, he turned and started into the forest. Last year he'd found her in the dogwoods just outside that old grove on the hilltop west of here. Place to start, at least, if he could have managed to avoid the Air Force. He perked his whiskers, stuck close to the roots, scurried as quickly as he could across any open space for the tree cover. Soon, the hills began wrinkling up around him, though, and Rat was glad to find pools of fog filling most of the vales, the frozen soil thawing. He moved carefully, but even after 10 years of watching Grandpa and Kylie slip through this stuff without stirring it, he knew he was leaving a swirling track any bird looking for him would be able to follow. But he did his best, took his bearings whenever he came out of the mist, kept moving west, till he was peering at the grove on the next hill over, a wooded island in an absolute lake of gray. He nodded, slid into the gloomy dampness, crossed the forest floor, and started up the slope. The fog clung to him till he topped the hill, a bright morning sky surrounding the stand of oaks and elms, the sudden scent of young Fisher sharp against his whiskers. Scurrying between the massive trunks, he followed the scent to the center of the grove, Blaze stretched out long and dark on her side in a puddle of sunlight there, her back to him. And she wasn't alone. An old kit fox, stood sniffing at her, a faded canvas pack over his shoulders. Scars showed white through his fur, gray with the dust of long weeks on the road, the strands of one ear flopping down the side of his head, and the other so torn, Rat couldn't see how it managed to stay upright. He didn't smell dangerous, though, so Rat cleared his throat and stepped from the trees.
"She all right?"
The Kit Fox looked up, eyes bright under his ruined ears, and smiled.
"Were I to hazard a guess," he said, a lilting accent in his voice, "I would say the young miss was fairly stoned to the gills."
He gestured to a cloth on the ground next to Blaze's head, a pile of gray dust on it.
"Not many other uses for dried mushroom spores, after all."
Rat sighed, moved forward, prodded a claw at Blaze's back.
"Lazy? You in there?"
Her sides rose and fell with her breathing, but otherwise she didn't move. Another sigh, and he started to pad around her head.
"Damn shaman stuff."
"Shaman, is it?"
The old Kit Fox clicked his tongue.
"Dangerous line of work, that."
"Tell me about it."
Rat flicked Blaze's ear, came into sight of her face, and stopped cold. She was lying there with her eyes wide open, her expression completely blank.
"Oh, yes,"
the Kit Fox said behind him,
"for on rare occasions, a shaman will actually find a vision."
"What?"
Looking over his shoulder, Rat saw the Kit Fox grinning, the sack in his paws, his cheeks puffing, blowing gray powder directly into Rat's face. Rat choked, his nose burning, his eyes stinging. He tried to scramble away, but he couldn't see, his paws suddenly heavy, his head suddenly light. Something whacked hard against him, and blinking away tears, he saw it was the ground. He'd fallen right over onto his side. Another moment to get his balance, and he pushed himself up, spun on the Kit Fox, shouted,
"What do you think you're..."
But the lights rustling beneath the old Kit Fox's fur stopped him, sparks that smoothed over the tangle of scars, knitted up the ragged ears, gave the fox a glow like summer sun on a flowing river, eyes as bright as stars on the clearest night Rat could imagine.
"Visions, however,"
that same voice went on as if nothing had happened,
"rarely appear how and where one would expect."
"My lord,"
came a whisper, Blaze finally raising her head, her eyes fixed on the thing.
"You came for me."
The silvery creature touched a paw to his chest and gave a slight bow.
"Did you ever doubt it?"
"Not for an instant,"
Blaze said. One fiery eyebrow arched.
"Well, you can lie convincingly. That's a mark in your favor."
His gaze washed warmth over Rat.
"I must admit a bit of surprise at finding we have an audience, however."
"My lord?"
Blaze looked back, and her jaw dropped.
"Rat? What are you doing here?"
Rat couldn't answer, his senses baffled more than they had been in years. A silvery Kit Fox, no larger than Blaze's dad, but at the same time, he filled the grove as completely as the morning light, leaves overhead brushing his fur, the breeze seeming to dance around and through him.
"The Lord Kit Fox,"
Rat heard himself say.
I must be dreaming."
The Kit Fox grinned.
"Such charming simplicity."
He nodded to Blaze.
"An acolyte of yours, perhaps?"
Blaze was scowling.
"Hardly, my lord. But he's been touched by curial forces, so I've been..."
"Really?"
The Lord Kit Fox flashed, light flooding Rat's eyes, a smell like plum jam suddenly across his whiskers.
"Why, the lad reeks of Brother Armadillo. Not to say a word against Dillo, you understand. Steadiest fellow you ever meet, and brews a fine beer, too. But, well, I've never known him to take an interest in you earthly folk. I'll have to bring it up at the next Lord's Conclave."
A crash like thunder, and Rat could see again, the Kit Fox turning to Blaze.
"Now, however, to business. Ready to take a little walk?"
Blaze stood.
"All my life, my lord."
Those glowing eyes narrowed, the metallic stink of danger spiking Rat's fur.
"Well, we'll see about that, won't we?"
And everything instantly went black. His training kicking in, Rat dropped into Grandpa's basic defensive crouch, his whiskers sweeping the air. Blaze, he could tell, was still just ahead of him, but the scents of magnolia blossoms, the warm, heavy air, the stars visible through what had to be gaps in clouds overhead.
"Welcome,"
The Lord Kitfox faded into view, his glow catching Blaze's dark fur and lighting the cypress and hickory trees around them. "Any idea where we are?"
"Well..."
Blaze began, but Rat interrupted, the sights and smells triggering memories.
"The northern edge of the bayous between Beaverpool and Lightuan."
The part of the country where the gypsies had found him all those years ago. Alphonse had told the story every summer when the caravan stopped at Peachtree Meadow to celebrate the summer festival.
"At least 10 days' journey south and east from Otter's Gate," he added.
The fox thing nodded to him.
"Very good."
Blaze's hackles rose.
"My lord, I don't understand. My friend hasn't had the training to participate in..."
"Nothing I can do."
The creature shrugged. "It's your spirit walk, after all, not mine." He made for the trees.
"Now, shall we get on with it?"
Yes, my lord.
She looked back at Rat, fear in her scent.
"Look, Tiny, I don't know, I didn't think..."
"Hello!"
The fox's voice called.
"If you must talk, walk as you do so."
Blaze blew a breath into Rat's face.
"Just stick close to me, okay? Whatever happens, keep your head, go with it, and it'll be all right."
She started after the silvery glow.
"Excuse me?"
Rat scurried to catch up with her.
"I'm imagining that one of the gods of all creation is taking me on a field trip, and you tell me it'll be all right?"
"Oh, we're not gods, per se."
The Kitfox flashed into being beside him, Rat jumping sideways, almost slamming into Blaze's leg.
"Though that's a bit on the hush-hush side, you know."
He gave Rat a crooked grin. Rat stared up at him.
"Not gods? But you... Please, my lord."
Blaze's ears dipped.
"He shouldn't be here. He doesn't understand..."
"Exactly."
The Lord Kitfox fixed his gaze on her.
"And whose fault is that, do you suppose?"
Her ears fell completely.
"I guess I could have..."
"Done your duty."
He tapped the ground. "Helped out a fella who, all uneducated, had experienced what you knew to be a curial visitation? Ceased exploiting his ignorance for your own aims? Something like that?" His tone was light, but the words seemed to bite at Rat's whiskers. The way Blaze winced, Rat could tell she felt it too. Eyes on the ground, she mumbled,
"Something like that."
"Well, the evening's first lesson, then."
The Lord Kitfox held up a claw.
"Deceiving suckers is a noble calling, but lying to one's associates can land one in unfortunate positions."
He nodded to Rat.
"You hoped to get something from this fellow while giving him nothing, and since he did not receive the information he required to avoid being here, here he is. His fate now rests entirely in your paws."
Rat wouldn't have thought Blaze's ears could fold any further, but somehow they did. He looked from her to the Kitfox and cleared his throat.
Begging your pardon and all, sir, but, well, I'm not completely helpless, you know."
"Oh, yes, yes."
The Kitfox patted Rat's ears, his touch like a summer breeze.
"You're very resourceful, I'm sure."
"Okay."
Rat stopped beneath the cypress trees, held up his paws.
"I don't mind a little hallucinating now and again, but if you're going to get insulting..."
"Hallucinating?"
A whoosh, and the Kitfox puffed into a cloud of swirling grays and whites, shurid words chattering from it.
"Have you not yet realized with whom you're dealing, young rat?"
Every hair on Rat's body prickled. It was Nona's sand painting of...
"Light Sleeper,"
he whispered. The cloud swarmed forward, surrounded him like gnats, the stink of Nona's incense flooding his whiskers. Rat raised his paws against it. But then it was gone, the Kitfox poking his nose into Rat's back.
"I keep expecting to find a bushy tail, you've so much squirrel about you."
He shook his head, turned and started into the trees again.
"Now come along, you two. We've an appointment to keep."
Frozen, Rat heard someone muttering, realized it was him, Nona's old doxology, a prayer he hadn't thought of in years. He'd heard Blaze and Skink say the curials were the same as the high ones, but he hadn't thought to ask who the Lord Kitfox might be. And if he was Light Sleeper, the trickster of every story Nona had told, a liar and a cheat and a troublemaker not to be trusted under any circumstances... A touch at his shoulder made him jump, Blaze beside him.
"I'm sorry, Tiny."
Her grip tightened.
"But you've got to understand, this is real, and we've got to play it through."
She stood and followed the Lord Kitfox into the woods. Unsure what else to do, Rat hurried after her, the silver shimmering ahead through the hickory trunks. They walked in silence, the ground sloping upward, the trees thinning until they came out of the cover, lightning rolling inside the thick clouds above and illuminating their dark billows. At the top of the hill sat the Lord Kitfox, and he beckoned with a claw. Blaze rushed forward, Rat moving more slowly to stand beside them, looking down the slope to the curl of a river, a road beside it leading to a spread of buildings. Lights shone at a dozen docks and warehouses, streets and landscaping from one end of the settlement to the other. Not as big as Ottersgate, sure, but from what Rat remembered of crossing the bayous with the caravan, a substantial little town. "You are here," the Kitfox murmured then, "because something's about to happen, something you might be able to change for the better." His glow against the rocky slope began to fade, and Rat turned to see the creature dissolving like fog, his grin, sharp and white and full of teeth, the last to go. "If you truly are as clever as you seem to think you are." He winked out, the darkness complete except for the flashes from the clouds and scattered lights in the village below. Rat clicked his tongue, looked from the buildings to Blaze and back again.
"So, what now?"
"Well,"
Blaze said, and the clouds exploded, a crack of white fire slamming through the blackness right down into the warehouses along the river, heat blasting Rat's face even from this distance. Thunder crashed, the ground shaking, knocking him backwards. Then everything was still, Rat sitting up, blinking to clear the red scrawl from the inside of his eyes. A few moments, and he could make out the lights of town again. But more now, yellow and orange, jumping up the sides of several buildings, the smoke of burning wood stroking his whiskers.
"Okay,"
he heard, and he turned, saw Blaze with narrow eyes focused on the fire.
"All these clouds around, I'll just call on the Lady Dolphin and ask her to rain."
Light flooded bright against the slope of the hill, Rat snapping back to see a blue-white fireball blossoming from the riverfront, the whoomp of the explosion pressing against his ears a second later. "Alcohol fire," the color said. "It must be a distillery or a liquor warehouse. Its flaming debris arching through the night sky to rain back down onto the roofs of the town. New fires springing up where they landed."
"Oh, gods,"
from Blaze. Rat glanced over, saw her eyes wide, her ears down. She took a breath, settled into the muddy dirt, and became perfectly still.
"Blaze?"
Rat looked from her to the town and back.
What?
"Shut up,"
she hissed between clenched teeth.
"I've got to concentrate on..."
Another glare of blue-white, another ball of fire rising, scattering out to more roofs, and Rat was on his paws, racing down the slope, leaping around rocks strewn over the hill. He hit the road, picked up his pace, bells ringing ahead.
"Fire!"
he yelled, shutters flying open as he reached the buildings at the outskirt of town.
"Down by the docks!"
The street narrowed, became paved, shadows dancing over the bricks, and Rat kept running, kept shouting, till he came out onto a village square, the green at the center filled with folks, almost all of them rats, hauling a big wheeled pump out of what had to be the firehouse, pushing carts, yelling and directing traffic, birds swooping to where one big rat stood beside a pile of strange harnesses. All this he saw in an instant. Then another blue-white fireball bloomed over the roofs, the explosion shattering glass all around the square. A second later, flaming chunks of wood crashed into the grass, shrieks of fear and the stink of smoke ratcheting up over Rat's whiskers.
"You there!"
someone yelled, and Rat saw the rat with the harnesses pointing at him.
"Help me with this!"
Rat ran over.
"What do I do?"
The big rat grabbed one of the harnesses, heavy cloth with a bucket attached to the front, metal fasteners at the bottom, slipped it over the head of the first bird in line, reached down, clicked the fasteners shut under the bird's outstretched wings, and looked over at Rat.
"Got it?"
"Got it!"
Rat pulled a harness from the pile and waved to the birds.
"Two lines, folks! Smaller birds over here!"
The big rat shouted,
"Those of you assigned to Captain Goshawk's unit, get your buckets filled at the river and head back here. The rest of you, get down to the fire line and report to your unit, Captain!"
Bird after bird after bird, Rat focused on getting the harnesses over their heads and buckled on. Another explosion blasted out while he worked the line, but his back was to the fire. He just folded his ears and held up the next harness. Now and then, water would drench him, birds banking away, buckets hanging empty and upside down from their harnesses. And then, when Rat straightened up, no bird was standing there. He blinked, and a paw fell on his shoulder, the big rat pulling him around.
"You squeamish, kid?"
Rat shook his head, and the big rat pushed him towards some birds in white vests at the other side of the green, stretchers laid out there in the grass. Rat dropped the harness and scrambled over. Then he was squeezing salve out of tubes onto strips of linen and laying them on steel trays, rats taking them away as fast as he could get them ready. Everything stank of smoke and pain, burned fur and feathers. Rat cinched his whiskers down tight, focused on the heavy camphor stench of the salve. Later, an hour or three, Rat had no idea, a tap on his shoulder made him look up. A red-furred rat, a stained paisley kerchief around her neck.
"Take a break. The fire's pushing the forward triage area back here, so we'll be getting another load of folks mighty quick. Grab yourself a sandwich and some coffee while you can."
She took the tube from Rat's paw and frowned at the sky.
"Damn clouds. Still not a drop of rain."
Shaking her head, she started treating the bandages. Rat tried to say thanks, but the tightness in his shoulders and neck made it come out a groan instead. The red rat flashed him a smile, and Rat stumbled into the park, needing to sit down, needing a drink, needing, "Did you see her?" A cracked voice called, and someone grabbed Rat's leg, tripped him, sprawling onto the damp grass. Pushing himself up, he looked over, saw a rat lying on a stretcher, his whole body burned black.
"My wife went back for the kits, and I lost her in the smoke."
Claws dug into Rat's ankle.
"I tried to find her, but...
His grip went slack, and Rat pulled away, black and red chunks sticking to the fur at his ankle. Stomach churning, whiskers rigid, he staggered up, and thunder crashed overhead louder than after the first lightning strike. His hackles shot straight up. Gods, no, it couldn't be another... But something soft splashed his back, a tap on his head, one on his leg, drops against his face, making him blink. A pattering began in the grass beside him, dark speckles appearing over the buildings around the square in the light from the fire behind him.
"Rain,"
someone said, then, "The storm, finally! Thank the gods! Get some tarps up over these folks!" This last from a robin hopping past, and Rat turned to follow him, but the ground slipped under his paws, the buildings seeming to spin, the light getting dimmer, Rat's head feeling so tingly. Was he passing out? Darkness squeezed tight around him, and Rat blinked to find warm sunlight in his fur, the scent of oaks and elms and early spring washing the smoke from his whiskers. Sitting up, he saw he was back in the grove, Blaze stretched out not far away, her sides heaving, her eyes and paws clenched, her mouth moving, but no sound coming out. He started to stand to call out to see if she was all right, but a silvery paw materialized above him, pressed him back down, the rest of the Lord Kitfox appearing. "Oh, not yet, lad," he whispered. "Not quite yet." And Rat couldn't speak or move, could just watch the Lord Kitfox pad past him to where Blaze lay. "Arise," the Kitfox said, touching her nose to the top of her head. With a cry, Blaze sprang to her paws.
"She came! The Lady Dolphin! The smoke and the fire and the screaming, and I took it all, showed it to her, begged her, made her understand what she needed to—"
"Breathe a bit." The Lord Kitfox stroked a paw over her back. "I find that often helps." Several shuddering breaths, and her fur began to settle, her eyes losing that manic tinge. The Lord Kitfox grinned.
"You really did quite well. I haven't been that pleasantly surprised in almost 2,000 years.
Blaze opened her mouth, but the Lord Kitfox held up a claw.
"No, no, time for my speech. For yesterday, you see, that spot by the bend of the Waver River in the north of the Bayou country was only swamp, the remains of the town long ago dissolved back into the fetid water. Yesterday, there'd been only 5 survivors when the distilleries were struck by lightning 116 years ago. But today..."
His grin got so wide it seemed a rat to spread from tree to tree over the whole grove.
"Today, you will find the lively little metropolis of Overton."
He touched a glowing paw to the side of Blaze's amazed face.
"You saved more than half the town, my lovely, gave it back its history, wrenched it from the clutches of pitiless time, and returned it to life and light."
"Returned?"
Blaze blinked several times.
"You mean changing history? But that's...
"That's what my shamans do."
The Lord Kitfox shrugged.
"Yes, I only take them back in time to do it on special occasions, but still.
He fixed his fiery eyes on her with such intensity, Rat could feel the heat where he lay. "I formally charge you, here and now, my own, to change history as it's made, to touch all you meet, to give them hope, to show them that they have the strength to persevere against the strongest of enemies. Will you do that, my shaman?" Blaze was shaking, but her voice came steady to Rat's ear.
"My lord, I will."
The Lord Kitfox nodded again, took Blaze's paws in his, and gave each a gentle lick. "Then I take your name from you, commit you from this day to the service of truth, whatever you may find it to be. You are now Fisher, a shaman empowered by curial privilege to act in my name for the good of all who tread this earth, and any other earths you may happen across." He grinned. "Sound like a plan?" The air almost sparkling around her, Blaze opened her mouth, but then her eyes slid shut, her body drooping, slumping to the grass in the center of the grove. Rat leaped up, his paralysis gone, raced toward her. "Blaze, are you—" "Yeah, she's fine." The Lord Kitfox stretched, yawned, and shook himself, the glow scattering from his fur like a swarm of silver butterflies, and leaving him the way Rat had first seen him, ears shredded, coat dusty and scarred, a canvas pack again on the ground beside him. "A bit of rest is all she needs now." Rat skidded up next to her, her breathing regular, her face peaceful, her muscles relaxed, the old Kitfox settling with a sigh against his pack. "Not the easiest thing in the world, what she did back there." He stroked the fur below Blaze's ear, a smile on his face instead of the sharp grins Rat had been seeing from him. "She'll bear some watching in years to come, this one will." Staring from the fox to Blaze and back again, Rat felt his knees start shuddering and had to sit down. The Kitfox gave a quiet chuckle. "I'd offer you a beer, but alas," he nudged his pack, "traveling light this trip."
What?
Rat finally got out, looking up at the Kitfox's weathered face.
"Was that real?"
He swallowed.
"Is this real right now?"
"As real as that?" The Kitfox crooked a claw at Rat's leg, the fur of his ankle still coated with black and red chunks. The burnt Rat, back in the park, his skin had sloughed off when he'd grabbed... A deeper memory hummed at Rat's whiskers, a scent below the charred smell, something familiar? With shaking claws, Rat scraped the goo from his fur, brought it to his nose, opened his whiskers wide, searched past the ashen horror of the burn itself, for that fleeting trace underneath, a trace of skin and fur oil, a trace that sparked at his earliest memories, voices speaking Manx, cedar and hickory and down and fleece, and above him, tall and strong and soft and gentle, taking him up, arms and breath and fur that smelled like...
No.
Rat couldn't move, couldn't think, couldn't believe.
My father, that rat, that was...
He raised his eyes to the old Kitfox.
No,
was all he could say.
Yeah, it's odd, actually.
The Kitfox stroked Blaze's neck again.
I'd been wondering and wondering what sort of test I could set for this one. What could possibly pose a challenge to someone as full of herself as she is?
His eyes came over, a silver sparkle still in them.
But then, who should come stumbling out of the trees, smelling of Brother Dillo and of times long gone and forgotten, but you? One of the five survivors of the Overton Fire, not only still alive, but at least 100 years younger than you ought to be. And, well, call me superstitious, but I took that as a bit of a sign.
No.
Rat clenched a fist, tried to focus on the jab of his claws into his palm.
This is just a dream, just a fantasy. You're a light sleeper, you're trying to trick me.
The Kitfox sighed again. Yes, he said, his shoulders slumping. It's all been an illusion, every bit of it. You got a face full of mushroom spores and imagined this whole little adventure. His eyes darted over to Rat, the ghost of a smile pulling at his snout. Or you didn't. One way to find out, though, isn't there? Rat swallowed.
The town.
Unless you did dream it.
The Kitfox climbed to his paws, shrugged the pack over his shoulders.
Which might not be a bad idea, now that I think of it.
He looked at Rat, and Rat sprang from the ground with a cry, the sun now standing at late afternoon, shadows long throughout the grove. Panting, he spun, Blaze curled up a few paces away, a light snore buzzing her nose, the trees tall and silent all around, nothing else in his ears or whiskers.
A quick look at his ankle showed only fur, no trace of the burnt flesh of the rat who'd grabbed him back in Overton, a town along the Waver River in the north of the Bayou country. The town, maybe, where Rat had been born more than 100 years ago. Shaking, Rat dropped back onto the grass and buried his face in his paws. Darkling Eclectica Presents has brought you Part 11 of Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Narration and music were by Michael Payne. Darkling Eclectica Presents is a production of KUCI in Irvine.